Greetings to each one of you again this evening, in the name of Jesus. Thank you for that devotional on light this evening. Seeing the details made me think of a little story I'd like to tell you before we go into the message. It doesn't relate directly to the message, but it does relate to looking into God's Word. Here a while ago, I was on a job after the garage door was installed, and there were some issues. It wasn't with the garage door, it was with the house and the concrete, the way it sloped and so on, and man was asking me if I would be willing to come at least take a look and see if there was anything we could do. And by way of making conversation with him and feeling him out, because it was a delicate situation, what all needed to be done, really to make it right, the whole concrete should have been busted up and re-poured, but the whole house is built now. But anyway, I asked him about his builder. I asked him if he was happy with his builder. And he launched out and started telling me a story, and I didn't know where it was going to go. He said, years ago, when he got married, and this was a man I would guess would be over 70. So he was talking a number of years ago. Possibly almost 80, I don't know. But anyway, when they got married, they only had one gray and white portrait of his father-in-law. That was the only picture they had of his father-in-law. And this was meant something to his wife, of course. And one day he was at a place of business up in Jackson, Mississippi, a little ways from home, in a bigger town, he was in the mall, and he saw an artist there who was doing paintings. I think it was pastels. I'm not sure what you call them exactly. But he was doing paintings, and he was painting these portraits of people. And he said he did such a good job. He said, I asked him, I said, if I brought you a black and white photo of my father-in-law, someone, could you copy it? And the man said, I believe I could. He said, bring it back to me next time you're in the area. So about a week later, he was in the area again, and he took him the photo, and the man looked at it and said, I'll do it, be back in an hour and a half, the painter said. So my customer went off about his business, and he said the whole time he was a little worried, what if it doesn't look like the picture? What if this man never saw my father-in-law? What if it doesn't look like him when he gets done? He didn't tell his wife about it. He wanted to surprise her with this. And what if it just doesn't turn out? And he went about his business in town, and he came back, and he walked up to the man, and he told me, my heart sank. It was a fine painting, but it didn't look like my father-in-law. He was almost done with it. It just didn't look like him. And he thought, what am I going to do with this? Am I even going to show it to my wife? And he was sitting there, and this was chasing his mind, these thoughts were chasing through his mind, when he said the man took what was almost done, and he said he went around the eyes a little bit, and just within just those last few seconds, it popped out and looked just like my father-in-law. He said, I want to tell you something. Details are important. Now, he went on to tell me what his builder lacked in the details. I have found, personally, sitting through meetings like this, we had revivals last week. I think I told you that already. Sometimes God touches our hearts, and we say, well, that's just a little detail. It's not that big of a deal, right? Both of the examples would be biblical, that Jesus wants to make you look just like his father. God wants to make you look just like his son. And details are important. Little things he's working on might be just what it takes to make you look like Christ. So let God work on the details. That doesn't really have to do with the message this evening. I just wanted to share that with you. Let's sing two verses of our theme song, number 276. Kendall, is that right? Do I have the right name? Would you lead us in the first and last verse of 276 this evening, please?
Prince of Peace, control my Yeah.
Bibles this evening for a message to Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6, we'll start here by reading the first 10 verses. So Galatians 6, verse 1. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. But let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. And I want to just pause here. Because of translations and sometimes older English, we struggle to understand exactly what a verse is saying. And I still struggle to understand exactly all the implications of this verse. But it's hard to understand just reading it. But every man, you understand the word prove to be try or to search his own works. And then you'll have, almost said confidence, but take a personal responsibility for your works. And not just be comparing them with others, I think would be a very loose paraphrase of that verse. So it teaches a personal responsibility. Now, verse 5, for every man shall bear his own burden. Falls right in with that, doesn't it? Verse 6, let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap, if we faint not. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. The title of this evening's message is Don't Faint. You caught that little phrase in here that says, he was talking about sowing and reaping, and he says, in due season you're going to reap. And then there's that little phrase that says, if we faint not. And we understand, or at least we are familiar with, the principles of sowing and reaping. And that would certainly be a message in itself. We want to look at that aspect of sowing and reaping, just the very basics of it, just a little bit to get started here. But then for the main part of the message, I would like to talk about points cautions, I should call them, about fainting, falling by the wayside. The purpose of this message is very singular. I feel like we're going to be looking a little bit at the negative side of something this evening, things that cause people to faint, but the purpose of this message is, like Hebrews says, to lift up the hands which hang down and strengthen the feeble knees. If anyone here feels this evening like you could just sit down and faint away in the Christian life, I want this to be an encouraging message to bolster you up, and not just a self-help program, but to remind you of the truth and to find answers, hopefully, and be a comfort and strength and to make straight paths for your feet. So, as I already mentioned, we're familiar with this law of sowing and reaping. It's not a new thought to us that it's in the Bible. You've heard it preached, and you've read it, and you've observed it in everyday life, the law of sowing and reaping. In fact, we take it for granted, almost for granted anyway. It's springtime in Mississippi. I know it feels like spring here. It looks like that's going to change a little bit, but we're out planting gardens, green beans, and some sweet corn is already going into the ground. Many fields are already planted. And I know this is so basic, and I know you've heard it before, but I just want you to remember that whatever you expect to reap is what you're going to sow. Thinking this through just a little bit backwards, maybe, than the way we often think of it, we as a family plant a little bit of extra, or sometimes it's a lot of extra, it seems like a lot of extra in the heat of summer, so that we have to take to market and sell some produce. So we capitalized probably mostly in green beans and sweet corn. So sometimes we have seed left over, but we have an end in mind. We want to be able to sell green beans. We want to be able to can a bunch of them, and we want to be able to sell a bunch of them. So when we go to plant, which my family is doing right now, except that it's too wet, having to wait for it to dry out a little bit. But when we go to plant, we don't just look at whatever seed we have left over from last year and say, oh, well, let's just plant that, do we? No, if you want green beans, you go looking for green bean seeds, right? You want sweet corn, you go looking for sweet corn seeds because there's an expected outcome. I know that's very, very, very basic, but it's actually very crucial to understand in life. But we also understand that it would be very futile and actually very ridiculous to go and plant seeds if we knew that for every green bean seed you plant, you'll get one more, right? That way you'll have one to plant next season. That would be, why would you even plant it, right? There would be no purpose in that. And hence, we have to recognize the other law of sowing and reaping, and that is that you reap more than what you sow. I know in life sometimes you, or in the natural, sometimes there's a complete crop failure. Understand that. But there's a lot of things we don't know about life. I have no idea some of the struggles I'm going to meet yet, some of the high points in my life, some of the low points in my life to come. I don't know how my life is going to end, whether it's going to be a long, drawn-out affair, or whether I'll die tonight in a car accident. I don't know those things. But this law of sowing and reaping, there's an element about it that we just don't have to be surprised when we see the reaping, because we're the ones that chose what to sow. Sometimes people act like they're surprised, but they shouldn't be. There was a very positive example that stood out to me a number of years ago. Oh, it must have been 6, 8 years ago, I don't know. Brother Harry, I think it was the last time Brother Harry Neuenschwander made it to conference. Sitting and visiting with him over lunchtime, a number of us were, and he had tears in his eyes. He was talking about, we were reminiscing a little bit, and he had tears in his eyes of joy, and he said, the church has just been too kind to me. They're just too kind to me. Now that comes from a humble heart. That was fine for Brother Harry to feel that way. But those of you that knew Brother Harry's life could have predicted that he would reap some kindness in his last days, right? He was a gentle and kind man. That was a positive example of the law of sowing and reaping. Does that mean that life will go smoothly and easily for one who sows to the Spirit? Just sow to the Spirit. Just sow to the Spirit, and all will be joy, and everything will come back to you 100-fold in ways that you would choose it. Can we teach that this evening? No. We know that that's not everything is just the way we would choose it. But let's be honest with this thought. And especially young people grasp this thought, because some of us older ones, it's right here in front of us. We can't get away from it. But when you're younger, sometimes you don't think about all of this. But think with me to the time when you reach the age, and some of you have already reached this age, and that's fine. God bless you in it. But think with me when you reach the age in life where you can't really change the course anymore of what you will be remembered by. In other words, your life story, what people are going to remember about you, is pretty much written down already. At that point in life, would you rather have lived your life in service to others and sowing to the Spirit, as Galatians 6 teaches, or would you rather have lived selfishly, sowing to the flesh? Well, the answer is obvious, right? Of course you would have rather have lived sowing to the Spirit, being a minister to others and following God carefully. Why? Why would you rather have lived that way? And the point I'm trying to make is that, what I want us to be real with this evening, is that the only benefit of sowing to the flesh is the sowing part. That's the only benefit. It's a whole lot easier to sow to the flesh, but that is where it ends. And that's why I wanted you young people to sit up and pay attention, not because I want to talk down to you, not in any way, but this reaping thing is real, even more real by the age of 42 than I ever realized it was going to be. And I still have probably quite a few years to go if God gives them to me. And so I simply want us to remember that as we go through the message this evening. The only benefit of sowing to the flesh is right here and now, the sowing part. It's easier to sow, and then that's where it ends. It's a hard, bitter reaping. Sowing to the Spirit, on the other hand, and I hope you don't disagree with me on this fact, the benefit is in the sowing and only so much more in the reaping. Is sowing to the Spirit actually that much more drudgery and hard and difficult than sowing to the flesh? If you believe that this evening, there's a fundamental error, because sowing to the Spirit isn't what it, sowing to the flesh is not what it looks like. It looks like fun and excitement, and it doesn't last long. You don't have to wait long at all to be glad to reap the rewards of sowing to the Spirit, to start to reap the rewards. Also consider the point that we read about, that God will never be mocked. You know what that word mocked means? It means to turn up the nose or sneer at, to mock or deride. God will never be fooled, and God will never be taken advantage of. That's different than earthly authorities. There's people that live their whole lives and can somehow, they are smooth enough and slippery enough and good enough cover-ups that they can fool pretty much who they want to fool, and they might live all their lives without getting caught, or at least we couldn't assure them that you absolutely will get caught in this life sometime. Most people do, but there are some. There's some unsolved, there's mysteries. There's some unsolved murders and so on that have happened, and probably someone got by with it, or maybe there was someone that took the blame for it. It wasn't the real perpetrator, but with God, he's never, ever mocked. Absolutely no one is in eternity now or will ever be in eternity gloating that they got what they wanted by living to the flesh and yet ended up in heaven because they were sly enough at it. Okay? Well, you understand that, but think down those lines. It doesn't ever happen. So, with these very obvious principles, why would people faint? This suggests that people were doing well. They had a beginning. They put some effort into their Christian life, but we're only going to reap only if we faint not. Why would people faint? Is this a real danger? Is this something abstract that we're talking about this evening? Well, any of you that have lived any length of time know the heartache and the disappointment and the weight it is in your heart to watch people you love faint and fall away. And you wish you could make decisions for them, and you can't. It is a real danger. So we're talking about harvest this evening. Let's think about farming or gardening. Even to those of us, and I'll include myself in this, who love to garden or love to farm, would we actually go to the effort of disking up the soil? Well, a lot of people don't even plow it or disk it anymore, but whatever. Preparing the soil, disking up the soil, go to the expense of buying the seed and the work of planting it and the work of cultivating it and the work of spraying it and whatever all the crop is, would they actually go to that time and expense just because they love to farm and because they love to garden if they knew there was not going to be a crop? No, of course not. Of course not. It's at the end of the season that you reap all that you put in to a crop. And I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands, but how many of you have ever started out in the spring with big ambitions, and by the time it really got hot, you realize, I bit off more than I can chew, and part of the garden just went to waste. Yeah, that holds out in practical everyday life, too. Sometimes it just gets hot, and the weeds get ahead of us, and it's discouraging. Well, in life, in the spiritual sense, this evening, there will be a harvest, no matter what. But we must not faint if we want to be a good harvest, one that we are looking forward to and not thorns and briars. All right, so I have seven, I guess we can call them points, seven warnings, I'm not sure, about what makes people, seven observations, I'll call them, about what makes people faint, what makes people lose out in the Christian life. Fainting here simply means to dissolve, to weaken, relax, or exhaust. To have one's strength relaxed, to be enfeebled through exhaustion, to grow weak, grow weary, be tired out, to despond or become faint-hearted. And I won't keep reading because you might get discouraged if we keep reading those definitions, right? But you can identify with him. All of us have been there, physically and spiritually. Number one, the first observation of why people who have begun on the Christian life and have put investment into the Christian life faint is because of distractions. A very simple point. A number of these points are very, very, very closely tied together. I'm going to try and keep them concise and fairly short and differentiate between them. So I'll do my best. I'll just say it that way. Distractions. A lack of focus, just easily distracted. And this happens especially when life becomes difficult, and especially when it's more difficult than what we realized it was going to be, and when difficulties crop up unexpectedly. Some distractions come without us inviting them, but other distractions of our own making. And if you don't believe that, think about this. We're talking about sowing and reaping, so those of you that have families, when it gets hot out there and you're trying to pick green beans, you watch your children, they'll come up with distractions, right? Because it gets hard and their back hurts and they're tired of it, and they distract each other. And if an airplane flies overhead, you know, and whatever, anything that can be a distraction is a distraction. And so the reason some people lose out is simply because they're distracted. Their focus gets pulled away to something else. And again, I just repeat that's especially critical when life gets hard, that we be careful not to be distracted. There are many other things which are easier and more enjoyable than picking green beans. And I don't care where you are in your life spiritually, you're going to meet times when there's things that would be a whole lot easier than just face what's in front of you. It's a whole lot easier just to distract yourself. The Christian must be a well-disciplined, self-disciplined, focused individual if he expects to reap a good harvest. So the world offers all kinds of distractions, all kinds of airplanes to fly over your heads, or vehicles to drive down the road, or rabbits to run out of the garden, whatever. Using that analogy of gardening. The world offers all kinds of distractions. There's a lot of glitter and glamour in the world. And it always appears easier and more inviting than where we find ourselves in life, if we let it, if we're not careful, when we're meeting hard times. And the answer to that, well, part of the answer, because some of these relate to other points, but part of the answer to that is to stay focused. It takes a focused individual to find fulfillment in Christ when life gets tough. You catch it? It takes a focused individual, someone who's focused on purpose, a person who has purpose in life when life gets tough. And I'm going to just step out a little bit further and tell you that focus and purpose in life are not gained. Focus and purpose in spiritual life are not gained by watching funny YouTube videos and scrolling down Facebook Marketplace and all the other distractions that aren't wrong in themselves but are so easy to turn to when life gets hard. I named two platforms. It might come around on your phone. It might be a funny music video. It might be whatever. And I'm not just saying that all of that should just be out and we should never be accessed whatsoever, but it is easy to turn to those things for distractions when life is hard rather than to deep reading, deep study of God's word, or meditation. You see, it takes work not to be distracted. It takes work for me not to be distracted when I'm preparing a message. My phone, I about have to put it where I can't hear it buzz. I had to do that today because I guess that's my own fault. Too many distractions, too many notifications. Good reading material, good. Healthy relationships, maintain them. Those are all part of staying focused and not being distracted by what this world has to offer. And there are a horde more things we could mention here. Just because I mentioned a couple of platforms doesn't mean that that's the end of it. You know that. Number two, observation of why people give up after a good start is comparison. Comparison. How many of you parents have ever heard the excuse that, why do I have to go out and pick green beans again this afternoon? I picked twice as many as my sibling yesterday. You ever hear that? If you want to be discouraged and sour in the Christian life, sit here and look around and see what everybody else has to give up and what everybody else has to do in relation to what you have to do. And I can guarantee you'll get there pretty quickly. And none of us wants to be there, but we tend to look around and look at each other. Second Corinthians 10:12 is a verse that we often quote in relation to this. I'll just read it. You don't have to turn there if you don't want to, but for we dare not make ourselves of the number of the number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves, but they measuring themselves and compare by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. I'm sorry, I stumbled through that a little bit. As often as I heard that when I was between about 6 and 15 years old, it's a wonder I can't just spit it out by memory. My dad quoted that verse to us many times over. Just stop comparing yourselves among yourselves in situations like this and many others. Well, that was to the Corinthians, and we know that they had. We know a little bit about these issues because if you turn back to 1 Corinthians, there was fighting and bickering among themselves, and some were saying, I'm of Paul, and others were saying, I'm of Apollos, and so on. And Paul says, aren't you yet carnal? And without correction to this, many of them would have easily fallen away, and we don't know. Maybe some of them did fall away. Maybe they did. Maybe not all of them heeded Paul's admonition to stop comparing themselves by themselves. Now, they were justifying themselves. I pulled that a little bit out of context. Let me be clear on that. They were justifying themselves as they looked at each other, but it comes from the same heart. It's the same heart that does these things. So looking around and looking at the tasks others are doing will cause us to faint by the wayside eventually. Comparison is not only the greatest robber of joy. You've probably heard that already, or a similar statement that comparison is the greatest robber of joy, and that's true, but it's not only the greatest robber of joy, it is also a robber of strength and energy. It will sap it out of you. If you want to use the comparison tool, there is a true, godly, biblical way to use it. Wow. I moved Hebrews in my Bible for some reason. Here we go. Hebrews 12. Let me read to you the first three verses. Wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, referring back to Hebrews 11, right? Chapter preceding. Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race which is set before us. Or run with endurance the race which is set before us. Okay, we're talking about endurance, running with endurance. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him, and I'm just going to, I think it won't do any injustice to say, compare your life with his. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your mind. That's exactly what we're talking about. Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. You want to use a comparison tool? It's a good tool to use. Compare your life with Jesus Christ. And instead of sapping you of energy and joy, you'll find it does exactly the opposite. Lest, just in case you would be weary and faint in your minds, compare your life with Jesus Christ. You have not yet resisted unto blood. Number three, the third observation I have this evening, is what causes people to faint. And this one is kind of self-evident, but I want to talk about it a little bit. It's exhaustion. Or the other way of this, the describing this word exhaustion is feeling overwhelmed. Just the overwhelming aspects of life. It is just too, it's too overwhelming to think of trying to keep on. And this is real in the Christian life at times. I think it's real for every one of us at times. The tension is real between wanting to be zealous in our service for God and yet being in a physical body which has limitations. And then when we get burned out physically, it tends to really carry over into our spiritual life. I don't know that you can actually 100% separate the two. I know that just because we're tired and worn out doesn't mean we need to be grumpy and feeding the flesh. I understand that, but when that becomes a way of life, it does have its effects. If I may refer to gardening or farming again, too much focus on everything that needs to be done yet can have an adverse effect on us. We need to know what needs to be done. We need to have goals, but too much focus on all the weeds, especially for children, can just have an overwhelming effect and be counterproductive. We have to just look at what we need to do right now in the next 15 minutes before supper time, whatever. Look at what is in front of us right now. And yes, we're pulling these weeds, and yes, a few days later we'll have to pull them again or hoe it again or whatever the case is. But don't worry about that. We're not there yet. Let's just do what we need to do today. There is also a fine line between not focusing so much, let me see if I can make this clear, focusing so much on all the needs around the world and in our communities and all the good that could be done and isn't getting done, focusing so much on that that we could become faint-hearted, and simply, the other side of that, simply hardening our hearts and refusing to do good as we have opportunity, like Galatians said, as ye therefore have opportunity. And some of our natures are different, but the modern day media that we have, I might as well say it, smartphones and Fox News and so on and so forth, wherever you get your world news, can actually press upon us in a way things that we absolutely can't control. And a lot of it we're actually not physically able to do anything about, and we can become overwhelmed with all the work that there would be to do, and we just sit on our hands and don't even do anything for the people God does bring into our lives. Now, this might be balancing out a little bit what we talked about last night. We talked about giving our lives and just being of service to whoever God brings us. We do need to be discerning in this. I believe it's at least part of the solution. Talking about the solution now is understanding that as we have therefore opportunity, God is going to bring opportunities into our life. And there are some lines that we have to draw. We can't do everything. We can't all be flying all around the globe when we're trying to raise a family and so on. That's a real tension. I don't know if tension was the right word there, but it is a real tension, a real struggle to know exactly how to apply all of this. When God brings people into your life, He expects you to minister to their needs. That is opportunity, the opportunity that God gives us. That is different than feeling responsible to meet all the needs around the globe. We already talked about that. There was a young missionary, and I do not remember the book, and I don't remember who the missionary was. Maybe one of y'all remember this and can help me after the service. But I remember reading about a missionary in, I believe it was Africa, I believe so, somewhere years ago across the water, and he wanted to labor for God so much that by mid to late 30s, if my memory serves me right, he was on his deathbed because he had just exhausted his body. And he lamented, actually, at his death. He said, this is what he said. He said, God has given me a message and a horse to deliver the message with. But alas, I have killed the horse and can no longer deliver the message. Now, I don't know modern day of people that have ruined their health by the time they're mid to late 30s because they have been doing so much mission work. But I think I have observed people who have tried to reach around so far that they were not emotionally stable in their own homes. And so there is some discretion needed on this point. That's all I'm saying. So exhaustion, too much taking on our shoulders, causes burnout and causes people to fall by the wayside sometimes. Personalities are different than this. But in spite of what I said, on one side we might have the personalities that try to take on so much that they take on, bite off more than they can chew, and on the other side we might have people that are just sitting on their hands. Find a balance and be careful to be doing God's work and not let exhaustion and burnout take over. Number four. Reason that people faint is a lack of vision. A lack of vision, or I would simply say a lack of a mental image of how you want your garden or fields to look. A lack of vision. When we go to the garden and see what needs to be done, when we're pulling weeds or hoeing or whatever, the way to do that is look at it and envision what you want it to look like and take out everything that doesn't belong there, right? Our children don't have that vision. We have to help them with that. But just as in gardening or farming, how foolish would it be to do most of the work and then stop because we have done enough work. Now, we've done enough cultivating. We've done enough fertilizing. We've done enough weed pulling. Now we're going to just sit back and wait for the harvest. Be very, very foolish, wouldn't it? But in a spiritual sense, this is very easy to do. And I would say, especially in middle age. I can't speak for older ones, but you've given your heart to Jesus Christ. You've confessed your sins. You've driven stakes in the ground. You've made mullets. You've got married now, and you've had children now, and when you got married, that was almost not a scary thing, but it brought a sobering responsibility. And then God brought children into your home, and that was a very sobering responsibility and scary in some ways, and you bring them up. And after a while, you've met most of the goals that you expect to meet in life as far as, the only thing to look forward to now is old age, right? And it is so easy to just sit back and start to take it a little easier. It works that way for me, at least. I want to remind us again of what we talked about last night, that being a Christian isn't about checking off boxes. It's about following Jesus Christ, and that has to go the whole way through life. And don't forget that even when you're in the middle of everything and life is busy and you feel your energy fading, that you're still sowing something. That's an inevitable concept. I often think of sowing as young people making choices and they're going to reap later, but even in the middle of life, you're still sowing something. Keep a vision. Keep a sharp focus. Bring it back from time to time. Keep bringing it back of what a good, orderly, godly, holy life looks like, and then observe your life and see what needs to be rooted out. Keep that vision of a holy life. Don't settle for less than holiness. I know we have struggles. I'm not trying to make people feel guilty for having to keep working at this. That's not what I... No, if you keep working at it and you're honest in life and you continue to weed out what shouldn't be there, God bless you. It's when you give up and say, oh, well. And you start to make excuses for yourself. It's especially easy to settle for mediocrity in the middle of life, I think, especially begins to be a battle. Number five. This is sort of just an extension of point number one of distractions, but I chose to separate it out because the Bible separates it out, and that is the cares and pleasures. Ooh, I just have cares and pleasures of this life written down. Luke also adds riches, cares and riches and pleasures of this life. And you know what? It says there, let me get it real quick. Let me get the wording just like Jesus explained it. Because he says virtually the same thing as what we're talking about. And they which fell among the thorns are they which, when they have heard, go forth and are choked with cares and riches and the pleasures of this life, and bring no fruit to perfection. They were growing. They had something going on, and that's a terrible picture to think of. Weeds and briars and thorns and all growing up and choking out plants. You know how easily it happens, especially in the South. It seems like, I don't know, it seems like we've been blessed with all kinds of plants that grow rapidly, and maybe it's just as bad around here, but stuff just grows terribly fast in the summer, especially when it rains, and it takes a lot of work to stay ahead. The cares and the riches and the pleasures of this life choke out the word. And in the culture we live in, I know that it is very important for me to stop and remember, and for you to stop and remember, that the riches are referred to in the Bible and the New Testament especially, not as God pouring out baskets of blessing on us, but as things to be aware of. All right? When you talk about thorns growing up and choking something out, that doesn't sound like something that is just... It is a blessing to have enough. I've never been seriously in need or want. I'm not trying to... We should thank God for what we have, but never forget that we are tested with plenty, not just blessed with plenty. Pleasures of this life. This might speak more to the younger folks. I don't know. I think it does. Pleasure speaks more to the younger folks. The pleasures of this life, the fun and the thrill of the world... Yeah, we all like to have an easy, plush life. It applies to all of us. But to most of us that are my age, you couldn't tempt me anymore with a ski slope or water skis or whatever all the world's offering today. It just, I don't have the energy for it. So it probably applies more. It's probably more of a snare to the young folks, the pleasures of this life. And then the cares of life applies probably more to middle age. You just get weighed down with all the responsibility, and when you think you can't take one more thing, oh, you find out you were put on another committee and find time for that too, or whatever it is. Maybe the riches apply more to the older also, the older generation. I don't know. I know that I'm not there yet, so maybe when I get there, I'll be able to preach more knowledgeably about this. But it does seem, if I may say this lovingly and carefully, it does seem like there might be a trend to take it easy and, may I say it this bluntly, I have no idea what you drive around. But to drive around in a King Ranch pickup truck and fuss about boys with big tires. See what I'm saying? Let's just be careful. I keep thinking that probably older age, the cares of life might let up a little bit. Busyness will go a little. I just had this conversation back home with some people that were mid-60s or older, and they claimed it doesn't. See, to me, it seems like surely they have more time to decide with what, more discretionary time than what I do, and they laughed at me and said it isn't that way. I wish they would at least pretend so I would have something to look forward to, but I don't know how it is. Anyway, that was a side note. Number six, what causes people to faint is loss of eternal perspective. And this, again, relates closely to focus, but a loss of eternal perspective. I wrote a loss of because when people come to Christ, what's their perspective? Eternity, right? The fear of going to hell is typically a very huge motivator in bringing people to the altar to confess their sins, right? It's huge. And when the burden's rolled away, what's the first thought? I don't have to fear anymore. I can look forward to heaven, right? There's an eternal perspective there. That's very, very natural. Keep it that way. Don't keep serving Christ just out of fear of going to hell, but keep an eternal perspective. Remember, this life, after all, is just this life. So when we come to Christ, we have that perspective, and then life drags on and it gets very, very, very real. And I guess I speak for you also to say many times it becomes just humdrum. And it is easy to forget that what I am doing here today, the activities that you went through today, whatever you chose to do, whatever you chose not to do, actually reach into eternity. It's actually pretty easy to forget that many times in my life. Do you actually think about this when you relate to a difficult customer? When you visit at the nursing home or wherever you might go, the prison, when there's a work day at church, when the children are really crabby, when the school teacher made an awful decision and how you're going to respond to that, and on and on and on, right? The decisions you make and the way you relate to life really truly reaches into eternity. We have to step back and take an eternal perspective. Is eternity real to you? It should be. If I may give just a couple helps that have helped me, and I'm not trying to come across as the person that has the answers, but a few things that I have felt found helpful to me, I'll just give two of them. Well, one is to simply step back and remember. Step away from life sometimes and remember. But another thing, it happened to me just on the way up here as I was driving along and I saw some clouds in the sky. It helps me to reflect and say, what if I suddenly saw Jesus standing on that cloud? What would I wish I would have done differently today? And almost every time I do that, the Holy Spirit speaks to some need in my life in a very real way that I realize that if I met eternity right now, God has grace. I don't believe we have to go around in fear, but I would wish that I hadn't lashed out at my child the way I did, or whatever it might be. You fill in the blank. That's one thing that has helped me to keep an eternal perspective. Another that I found helpful, and I don't even remember who shared this with me, but be real with God's feelings and emotions about you. And when you lay down in bed at night or sometime in the quietness, maybe when you get up and read your Bible, but I find it helpful to do at the end of the day, to mull over the day and say, now, what really were God's emotions as he looked at my day today? What made him wince? What made him wipe a tear? What made him smile and say, there's my son? And I find again in moments like that, God really speaks to our heart's needs. And you may have found other ways of keeping eternity real. God bless you in that. But find ways that keeps eternity in front of you. And look at this life from an eternal perspective, not just this life from within, like it's all there is. And the last one that I want to talk about, observation of why people faint and fall away, is deception. And I want to talk about a very specific area of deception. But the area that we fall into, to where we believe, I shouldn't say where we really believe, where we don't really believe, we're not really sure, it's not really right in front of our eyes that no one mocks God. That, yeah, the bad sinners are going to suffer, right? But be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Be very, very, very leery. Be very careful in life that we don't come to the point where we say, well, as a general rule, I'm sowing good seed. There's a few areas in my life that I am sowing to the flesh. I know that. But I'm sowing a lot more good seed than I am bad seed. You wouldn't verbalize that. You probably wouldn't even think through it that way. But it can become a way of life to where we doubt that no one ever fools God. No one ever gets the upper hand. In conclusion this evening, I told you the purpose of this evening's message was to be positive. I don't know if you feel like I just made it all negative or not. But I simply want to encourage you at Tyrone Congregation. Just don't faint. Please keep on keeping on. Please keep on doing, struggling, working together. Stay focused. Consider Jesus. Keep eternity in view. And remind yourself of God's promises to be faithful and warnings to the unfaithful. I want to see every one of you receive a crown of glory one day. Wasn't planning to give an invitation this evening. Perhaps we will. Let's just bow our heads for a word of prayer.